Story of a German merchant family whose tradition, kept in a great family chronicle, is to subjugate all personal desire to the needs of the firm. Buddenbrooks, dramatised by Judith Adams, with original music by Nico Muli.
Our tale continues, Hanno. After your christening in 1861, anxious years pass while you are slow to walk or talk. Instead, you play. And while you play, you always hear the music drifting up from the room beneath your nursery. And though you hardly ever smile, your heart dances in unconscious harmony. Elsewhere, there's discord. Across town in the old Buddenbrook home at Meng Street, the unimaginable is taking place.
You don't even ask me. You go right over my head.
Tom, you mustn't.
I've done as I had to, as I was asked to do.
You've acted irresponsibly, beyond all reason.
Reason's not God's way, my son.
Don't talk cant to me, Mother. I'm not one of your fat pastors. I am talking about justice and responsibility, which you've ignored in the most astonishing manner.
Thomas, need I remind you that you are ignoring your duty of respect to me?
You've shown me no respect. None.
I'll be silent, Thomas.
I'll be silent when I'm finished. I'll be silent when you see what you've done to the family. To the firm of Buddenbrook and Son.
Tom, please don't talk like this. Not with Clara so recently gone. How can you?
Clara's left no heir. We didn't even need to let Tibertius keep whatever's left of the dowry. But to promise him Clara's whole inheritance over my head? 127,500 marks as well, without asking me, the head of the firm and of the family.
I didn't ask you, because you would have tried to stop me.
Tried? By God, and I would have stopped you.
Where's your heart, Thomas? Clara wished it. She wrote to me on her deathbed.
Clara was a pious and ignorant young woman.
And Christian, agreed.
Tibertius went to Christian? Of course he did. He knows Tony's no better than a child in such matters. She was kept ignorant in case she blurted it to me. You haven't grasped it yet, Mother, but your son-in-law, the ingenious pastor, is nothing but a scheming rogue and a fortune hunter.
Sons-in-law are always rogues. Remember Grunlich?
A fortune hunter? I think I know better than two women and a degenerate fool.
You speak of us all with such hatred and contempt, and in your father's house.
Tom, good heavens, is it so terrible we must fight like this?
You're right. It's useless. Nothing goes well anymore. You think we can absorb any loss, Tony, but it adds up, you see. You lost 80,000 to Grunlich.
I know
through no fault of yours, but Christian loses us a fortune in neglected business, doctor's bills and debts, because Mother will always send him money in secret, she thinks, as if I don't see our accounts every day. Not only Clara's dowry, but her future inheritance is lost to us as well. And then there's me. I spend 100,000 marks on a new house. Do you think I haven't been made to regret that now? With every day that passes. If Father were alive and in this room, he would fold his hands and commend us to the mercy of God.
But your house is a beacon of your success. Father would be
it
so...
It may as well have been built on a condemned site. Look at us.
Can the settlement be altered?
Yes, perhaps, if I take my own mother to court and add a public scandal to a family one. Let it be. Let it all be as it is. Nothing goes well anymore.
Even so, slowly drawn into the world by music, you play and grow, Hanno, until you find yourself at last sitting aged 7 in that distant paradise, Mama's music room.
I cannot play this, dear lady. I am your most devoted servant, but I cannot. This isn't music. This is chaos. Blasphemy. A perfumed fog shot through with lightning. a deadly trap. Liebestod, love, death? As I live and breathe, this is the death of music itself. It goes too far, too far. Look, the child sits there, listening. Would you have me play on and utterly corrupt his soul?
Fool, be reasonable. Let me show you. There now. Beethoven seems so pure, clear and natural to you by contrast, but you know as well as I do that the words you've just used against Wagner were used against Beethoven in his day. I tell you, in time this music will sound less foreign to you than you think. Be patient.
If you're right, dear lady, then it's my soul I fear for. But you're wrong. Forgive me, Wagner's all sophistry and juggling.
Well, then, pass me my violin. The G minor concerto of Bach now, Herr Fuhl. Ah. We still haven't found the adagio yet, to my satisfaction.
Tom, here all alone.
Tony, come in, close the door. Back from Poppenrader already? How's Armgard?
Quite well. She sends love to you, and especially to Gerda.
Gerda's with her music. She's waiting to go to the casino tonight. Böhm's playing the violin, I believe. Christian's coming to fetch her.
He's staying with Mother.
Until Christmas, it seems. At least.
I've noticed Gerda likes Christian.
Yes. Apparently, in her very words, he's even less of a burger than you are, Thomas.
What does she mean by that? There's no better burger walks the earth than you.
Bless you, Tony. I think she means something a little more oblique.
Oh. I know I'm not as clever as she is, and you are. I never was. Oh, to be as beautiful and clever as Gerda is. You've done so well. Am I disturbing you? I went to find Hanno to kiss him goodnight, but Edith says he's still in the music room.
No, I'm glad to be disturbed for once. Sit down. Tell me about your visit.
We talked a lot about old times at school. We shared a bedroom together, you know. Gerda and Armgard and me.
Yes, I know.
Gerda was never as fond of me as I was of her. I always loved her. Strange, even though Armgard was a von and rich and married a landowner, as she said she would, Gerda's the real aristocrat. Why are you smiling? She certainly made the better marriage.
I wonder if she'd agree with you.
Tom, what are you saying? You're tired. You work too late in the evening.
What else is there to do?
I know. You have so much responsibility as head of the firm and as consul and senator. But yours is a wonderful marriage. The only one that works. There's my Erica with Weinschenk, who, when he comes home with money worries, forces Erica to be amusing and diverting. And it seems Ralph von Maiboom is not so different from Weinschenk, even though he's a von. To tell the truth, Armgard wept bitterly once we were alone.
Well, what's the matter with Herr von Maiboom?
He gambles, and his debts are enormous, Armgard says. In fact, that's why he asked her to invite me.
Oh?
He knows I'm your sister and his wife's friend, Tom, and they both insist, beg, I speak with you. You understand?
I'm afraid I think I do. And before you begin, you know the firm of Buddenbrook will never be involved in usury.
I don't know what that is, Tom. But I do know that if you don't make a large sum of money out of this cry for help, someone else will. Hagenstrom, perhaps.
Hagenstrom, perhaps. Oh, my little Mephistopheles. Sounds to me as though the devil's in this piece of business already.
Hanno, don't sit there invisible. Come closer.
Master Johann? Sit here, next to me, where you can see my hands. Listen now, my boy. And... such beauty is not of this earth, Hanno, and yet it flows from our hands, you see. Only perfect technique can create perfect beauty. Do you understand?
Yes.
He understands.
Ta-da! You see? Cape and walking stick and stove hat all for you, my dear lady.
Oh, Christian, let me kiss you. Mwah. You look splendid. Mm. The perfect gentleman.
All borrowed, naturally, from Dolman.
Perfect. I'll get my cloak.
Well, Herr Fuhl?
Opera, is it? Wagner?
No, indeed. In Lübeck, if only. Do you not see how he shines ever brighter? Star, hey, Lord, rising higher. Do you not see to drown, to founder, unconscious, utmost rapture?
Mama, may I come to the theatre too?
Oh. No, darling, not this time. Soon, I promise.
You like the theatre, do you, Hannah? Hey?
I do, Uncle. Oh. I have one of my own upstairs.
You do? He does, by God, that's fine. So did I once. Did you ask for it? Oh, so you did ask for it. Why did you?
I wanted to make operas of my own, Uncle.
You've been to an opera?
He has.
Ah.
Fidelio.
Ah, wonderful. Ah, there it is again. Ah, I never have fun with that. It's not an ordinary pain. It's the nerves down the left side. Do you ever... No. Well, then, amuse yourself with your theatre, Hanno, but not too much, eh? Don't neglect your work, huh? I've made too many mistakes, you know.
Christian!
Yes, Gerda, ma'am. Shall we?
You're mistaken, Tom. I've let you have your say, but you're mistaken. Von Maiboom doesn't want a loan from you. The knife's at his throat. He wants to sell you the crop worth, he swears, 70,000 marks. Now. At once. In the blade, he called it. For 35,000.
Heaven and earth. Sell a crop before harvest for half its value. Poor fellow.
So you see, Tom, you have the chance to do a good deed and make the best business deal of your life.
My darling child, you're talking the sheerest nonsense. Now, come. We're both tired. Enough of this.
I know. God forbid, dear father would never have done it. But Tom, I shall say this to you, though I know I'm nothing much. I can see for myself things aren't going so well. You say so often. Perhaps you're being too cautious for the times we live in.
Tony.
You're depressed by small things at the moment. It's only natural when you work so hard, but you're letting chances slip for good business deals. You know you are. With scruples in your way that hardly anyone would care about. Not these days, anyway.
Stop. You're making me angry. I mean, just because most businessmen are scoundrels...
What is it?
You know, once upon a time, I raged at Christian for saying those very words.
Yes, see? And I won't stop this time. I know I'm foolish and uneducated, but I know why you were vexed with him then and why you're vexed with me now. I've noticed it about myself and others that we're angriest with people who express an opinion we have ourselves in our deepest heart and daren't say out loud. But I'm just a silly female, I know, who wants so much to do something for you and for the family. I would have been so proud to be the means to new prosperity instead of costing you money as my divorce and keep cost you. It's a pity, but there it is. Let it go, Tom. I won't urge you any more. We'll leave these things to Herman Hagenstrom and his lemon bun with goose between.
You're cleverer than you think. You and Hagenstrom together. If you'd let him take that kiss, who knows, eh?
Tom!
We're fools, though, working ourselves up when I don't even know the Poppenrader estate or its crop.
Oh, it's so grand. Acres and acres. You would have to go and see to believe it, Tom. But let's not waste any more words over it. Well, the music stopped. So Gerda and Christian must be leaving for their concert. I can go and wave them off and see Ida and kiss my little nephew.
Leave the door.
Thomas will spend the evening watching for Gerda's return. He rises and goes to the mirror, as he does a dozen times a day. And as he looks at that ravaged face, the desperate regrets and inspirations of a drowning man tear through him. Returning to the desk, he grasps pen and paper.
I'll do it. I will do it.
Ida, you good old soul, you're always mending. Is he asleep?
Yes, he's asleep.
Oh, look. He's dreaming.
Too much excitement late at night. School all day and music all evening. And then he wants to go with his mother and uncle, of course, to the concert.
Was he upset?
He says nothing, but I know.
Oh, he's such a quiet, gentle child. Does he like going to school?
Oh, no, Tony. They don't know him, the masters, as I do. He finds it hard to pay attention to them, and he gets very tired.
Oh, poor darling. Have they whipped him yet?
Whipped? No. How could they have the heart once the boy looks at them?
I remember my first day at school. I howled like a chained-up dog because life was so good at home, and...
Oh,
shh. What's the matter with him? Oh. Is he awake?
No, Tony, little one.
But his eyes are open.
In my little garden, Coco.
It's his night terrors. Listen.
All my onions in the water. Clock strikes 12. A little man stands there. Not there.
He's saying his piece from school. Oh, hush, little darling, go to sleep.
The moon shines.
Oh, Isa. Oh, hush, little one, I'm here. Let go of your arms now. There. Lie down again and sleep.
I'll do it. I will do it. Aunt Tony.
Lie down, darling. Shh. Sleep. How strange, how very strange. Why is he always so sad? What does Grabov say? Pigeon and French bread, I imagine.
No.
But good God, Ida. I think there are better doctors in the world than Grabov. I know there are.
Soon, it's to be July 7th, 1868, 100 years to the day, according to the documents, since the founding of the firm of Johann Buddenbrook and Son.
It's the talk of the whole town, Tom. We must open our house and hearts to everyone.
Must we?
Tom.
Dear child, I wish we could ignore the whole affair.
Ignore it? Impossible.
I know, but I wish the impossible.
Is it the Poppenrada harvest? I've kept it secret. No one knows.
No, no one but you and I and Herr Marcus and Herr and Frau von Maiboom.
I know you're a little nervous now, but there's no reason.
Oh, Tony, if only I'd sold it already.
But Tony has run off to collect the family chronicle from Meng Street, and on the day she arrives at the door of the Fisher's Lane house clutching it to her heart, with two porters carrying a large walnut-framed painting of the four Buddenbrook masters. In the centre, in gold, sits the fateful exhortation.
My son, attend with zeal the business of the day, but do none that hinders thee from sleep at night.
Yes, thank you. An undisturbed night's a very good thing, to be sure. Thank you, my dear family. Tony, for this thoughtful and beautiful gift, which will hang behind my desk in the office.
I have the family book here, Tom. Oh. Mother agrees you must have it with you in Fisher's Lane now.
Let me kiss you, Thomas. This is a wonderful day, my dear son. We must thank God unceasingly with all our hearts for all his mercies.
Of course we must, Mother. Now, shall we take tea before the whole town arrives?
One moment, Thomas. Hanno has a poem he wishes to say to you. Come here, Hanno.
Mama?
By the piano. Say it as you did this morning to me and Ida, dearest, as though no one else is here. Don't be afraid.
Well, my son, let's hear it.
The Shepherd's Sunday Hymn by Uhland.
My dear child, not like that. Not leaning on the piano with your hands crossed. Stand up. Let your arms hang by your side. Speak out.
This is the day of our...
One begins with a bow, and then one starts over again. Much louder.
Tom.
Come on, Shepherd's Sunday Hymn. Goodness. There's no pleasure in watching you cry. What are you crying about? Are you a little girl, after all? What's to become of you if you go on like this, drowning yourself in tears every time you have to speak to people? Hopeless! Right, go to your room. No. Go to my study, where there's no harmonium, and think it over until the party begins. And take this with you.
You enter your father's study, laden with the family book. This same weighty object before me now. You place it on the desk and open it to the final entry. You gaze at the words, letting your free hand play with a golden ebony pen. At the very bottom of the page, in Papa's script, is your own name. Justus Johann Kasper, born April 15th, 1861. You like looking at it. You straighten the book up, take a ruler, and with care, mechanically and dreamily, just as you've been taught to embellish your arithmetic book at school, you ink a clean line, diagonally, across the entire page, and then a second line, just as your father enters to fetch his Russian cigarettes.
What are you doing? What's the matter with you? Answer! God's name, what possessed you to do this? Why?
I thought there was nothing else to come.
Get out. Get out!
God. Oh, God. Help me.
Gerda?
Thomas, over here. Is the band from the theatre.
Well, who brought them?
Peter Dolman and Christian, of course.
Of course they did.
The feasting and dancing continue. Much later, no one notices a fellow with a red face passing through the dancers, swinging one arm with importance and holding in the other hand a telegram. He finds Herr Marcus, who finds the master of the house leaning by the dumb waiter, smoking.
From Popenrader Estate, Senator.
Here.
Tom first opens the message, and then his eyes, very wide.
Very well, sir. Very well, there it is. You and Papa were right about speculation, Marcus. All the crops lost.
All? Was it a hurricane or...?
That hail. That little bit of hail. Hannah was right. There's nothing left to come after all.
Does he use a crowbar?
Don't, Kai. You can't imagine what it's like when he pulls the roots out. The sound it makes. In your chest.
Do you scream?
No, I don't think so. Ida would be upset. And I have to go for years and years. Until the job's done, Papa says.
My father wouldn't mind if all my teeth fell out.
But they look so white and fine.
No thanks to Demon Brecht.
He's not so bad. He goes pale before the drill starts, and then sweats and smells he's so sorry for me. You'd like his parrot. He has a parrot called Josephus, who looks quite like him, quite polite. It says, "Sit down, please. One moment, please."
Sit down, please. One moment, please. Go to the devil, please.
Imagine a parrot called Josephus, who looks like Brecht, the tooth smasher.
Tell me about your father, Kai.
Come and see for yourself.
Where are you going, little one?
Not far, Ida.
Time at last for me to leap on stage. I have tangled hair, shabby clothes, elegant fingers and tapering nails, all covered in dust and dirt. Though filthy and feral, I'm a real count. My first name, straight out of the Snow Queen, is Kai. Kai Count Muln. I've been your storyteller from the very beginning. I am, like Hanno, 8 years old.
Here's where we live. Just me and my father. That's him there, digging in that field. He's Count Eberhard Muln. But he's been changed by a wizard into a peasant. His manor house, as you can see, is now a dunghill. And his subjects are all chickens and dogs and vegetables. Read that sign on the gate.
Here lives Count Muln. He wants nothing, buys nothing, and gives nothing away.
Hanno, little one.
You! Clear off!
Well! How rude!
It's me, Father!
Clear off! Come back when it's dark!
Come away, Hanno. Come home.
Can Kai come too?
Very well, but he must wait outside while I ask your father, Hanno.
Herr Buddenbrook allows me into his house, of course. I imagine he hopes Ida might clean me up and tame me, and that Hanno might absorb some of my energy and wild spirits. We have other plans. Yours are to have a friend at last. Mine, to love and serve you all my life.
Horn is transparent. Glass is more transparent. Light is...
transparentist.
Surely not.
No, but why not, I say? What's this?
Harmonium. Grandmother gave it me for Christmas. You have to pump the pedals for it to play.
This is a fine little beast. Can you play it?
Yes.
Then do. Now then, when I nod, you play.
Play what?
Make it up. Once upon a time, chord. In the kingdom of Pumpernickel, there lived, in a castle full of mirrors and musical instruments made of silver, a beautiful prince who liked nothing better than to ride his horse along the beach and swim in the waves and chase mermaids, for whom he made up tunes while they combed their hair. But in a dark cave by the shore there lived a wicked enchanter, tall and pale, with hands like claws, who saw the prince one day and hated him for his beauty and happiness, and seized him from his horse and turned him into a green and red parrot named Josephus.
What comes next? Who's there? Papa!
Your servant, Senator Buddenbrook.
Good evening, Count Mern. Your father's well, I hope?
He is, sir, and he hopes the same of you.
Oh, well, thank him. Ida tells me you're helping Hanno with his schoolwork. He's a little behind his fellows, you know.
I do know, sir. We're in the same class, at the same desk.
Ah, oh, it's very good of you. Education's a powerful thing. I left school too young, Count Mern. I had to take over my father's business when he died. Well, I'm here to tell you I'm going out, Hanno, to Meng Street. Mother's coming with me. Grandmother's not recovering as she should from her chill. Do as Ida tells you. Count.
Sir, how pale and sad he looks. I suppose his mother is dying.
Yes. What comes next, Kai? In the story?
I do, of course. The prince was kept in a gilded cage in the enchanter's cave, and everyone in the kingdom of Pumpernickel thought he drowned and went into deep mourning and forgot to wash or change their clothes or do their homework. But over the mountain, growing up, was a fearless boy, a hero who had an army of dogs, chickens and guinea pigs, and a magic sword.
Oh, Kai! It's an opera. Look. Look what else I had for Christmas. It has everything a real theatre had, see? Curtains, moving scenery, a prompter's box, lights, players. It's the last act of Fidelio by Beethoven, Kai, when all the prisoners go free and Fidelio rescues them. And she's the hero. And she's a girl in disguise. Here, see? She has two figures, a boy Fidelio and a girl Fidelio. Fidelio means faithful to the end. I saw it really, Kai, in a real theatre. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to write operas one day, the music, and you can write the words, don't you see?
Rub off?
Yes, Senator, it's now both lungs. We haven't been able to prevent it. Your mother is a model patient and helps all she can, but I fear we are, after all, losing the battle.
How long can she go on like it?
I can't say. She may be released in the next few minutes, or she may live for hours. It's a process of suffocation and edema.
I know. Pulmonary catarrh. Old people get it and they drown in their own fluids.
She must be suffering horribly.
I assure you, Herr Senator, those are largely reflex actions, you see.
God grant you're right. Hanno should be fetched.
To see this? No.
Give me something.
Mama?
Yes, Clara. I'm coming.
I can't stand any more of this.
Christian!
Leave him, Tom.
Jean. I'm coming, dearest Jean. Have mercy, gentlemen. Let me sleep. Let me... Oh, Clara!
I'll have the gilt Sunday dinner service and table linen.
I'm willing to take the onion pattern everyday service for Erica.
And what about me?
I must ask you not to forget me.
Who's forgetting you? Are you going to use a dinner service at your club or hang tapestries in your rented rooms? No one's trying to cheat you. If you get less of the effects, you'll get more of the money.
I don't want the money. I want the linen and dishes.
Why?
Well, I'm thinking of getting married. Quite soon, in fact.
Well, I must say, your notions never cease to surprise me. I assume you've been waiting for Mother's death.
Yes. Mother was old. She came from a past generation whose ideas I don't respect, but I respected her feelings always and waited.
I imagine I'll agree with Mother in this matter.
I can't be bothered with that.
You will be bothered with it. I presume you've the same person in mind you mentioned before.
Person? Thomas Person?
Mm-hmm.
Alina's not a whore, you know. She left the others to live with me, and her last child is mine, a daughter called...
Silence!
Lisa. Tom! Christian! And Mother only just buried...
You've no shame. You've a lack of feeling that amounts to a disease.
And you, Thomas. And you? You never came to see me in hospital when I lay there suffering.
I've more serious things to attend to than your hypochondria. Besides, my own health
is... Come, Thomas! You are in perfect health. Do you lie almost dying of rheumatism and the torments on your left side? Does it happen to you that you come into your room when it's getting dark and see a man sitting on the sofa nodding at you when there's no man there?
Christian, what are you saying? My God! And Tom, what are you quarrelling about over Mother's things? How can you?
If you go entirely mad soon, and I tell you plainly, I don't think it at all unlikely, I shan't shed a tear.
And you won't shed a tear when I die, either.
When you die? When you die, you won't die. I'll be dead before you.
Very well, then. We'll see who dies first. Your heart is full of coldness, Thomas, and ill will to me, to everyone. Even poor little Hannah's terrified of you. You've turned to ice. You freeze us just by looking.
You speak some truth. Now so will I. I've become what I am because I don't want to become what you are. I shrink from you to guard myself. Your being, your existence are a deadly danger to me. Take what you like. Go where you please. But if you marry that whore and drag our name through yet more mud, I'll declare you incompetent and have you shut away forever. Do you hear me? Forever. Now leave us.
I shall. And God help you, brother.
Tom, should we go on?
Let's leave it for now, Tony. But there's one thing. Can't wait. I'll need your consent as soon as possible. Of course, if I didn't have Fisher's Lane...
Consent for what, Tom?
We have to sell this house.
This house? Meng Street? Oh, Tom! You know my life hasn't been easy, and this house has always been my refuge, my safe harbour from the storms. Remember the celebrations when we moved in? The salt and bread feast when we know bigger than Hanno.
I'll make sure you have a nice apartment near to us in the centre.
No, Tom.
Big enough for Erica too, if Feinschenk can't improve his business and his marriage soon enough. Everything has its time, Tony. We must all do what we must, and we can't afford to ignore a buyer's interest.
Someone's interested already?
Yes.
Oh, Tom. Who?
Hagenstrom, of course. Herman Hagenstrom.
Tell me one thing. Isn't this like a nightmare to you?
Exactly, like a nightmare.
Hagenstrom, no! It's impossible.
Ironic, I think, is the word, my dear.
Herr Fuhl, Gerda's friend and the organist of St. Mary's, is a musician of remarkable ability and repute, and his lessons are equally remarkable. By the age of 12, you have an intuitive mastery of the piano, which is already being expressed through improvisation and composition.
Oh, how the child complains!
play. Oh, Gerda, Tom, how he can play. He will be a Mozart.
That's enough, Tony. Please don't put such ideas into the child's head. Now, come along. Our meal's getting cold.
Mama, is it very soon we'll be going to Travemünde for the summer holidays?
Oh, Travemünde. Are you in love with it too?
Yes, Aunt Tony. Are you?
Yes, Hanno. The truth is the truth, and Travemünde is and always will be a beautiful place to be. I shall remember till I die the weeks I spent there as a girl, not much older than you. I was so silly in those days. I thought I could keep the pretty star out of the jellyfish, so I took him back to the pilot captain's house where I was staying and spread it out in the sun on the veranda to dry. And when I went back to look, there was nothing left, of course. Just a big wet spot and a smell like rotten seaweed. I learned a lot there. About life. Oh, Tom. The sea.
To wake early and lie in bed, eyes still closed, knowing the light through your eyelids is Travemünde light. To feel soft sand under your feet and see the blue-green foamy water when you bathe. You listen to the lapping waves whispering all is well and close your eyes, your face turned to the horizon.
Come, little Hanno, it's supper time. We must go. If you sit here and sleep, you'll drown.
Days pass in perfect harmony of wave beat and heartbeat until the carriage comes. Your chin trembles. It only takes Ida to say,
"We'll come back next year, darling."
For the tears to run down your long, dark lashes. Slowly, slowly, you will learn again to live without the sea and console yourself with Herr Fuhl, your music, and me.
What kind of soldier is he, Hanno?
A second lieutenant of infantry from the Rhineland. His battalion's quartered in the town.
Tell me his name again.
Herr Lieutenant René Maria von Trotha.
Does he wear his sword?
Sometimes. He always wears his uniform, but not as though he cares for it.
He'll be a conscript then. Or, yes, he'd join to please his father. Or to run away from his father. What's he really, do you think?
Well, he plays the piano, viola, violin, cello and flute. All of them, as well as Mama, plays just the violin.
Is she in love with him?
No, she loves Papa.
Is he in love with her, then? Hopelessly?
All they do is play.
His comrades must hate him.
Why must they hate him?
Because in that case, he's a real artist. Neither war nor love will stop him playing.
Is he a hero, then? Will you still write a story round him, Kai?
Hard to say. He might be a hero, even though he's an artist. A real soldier would have been better. Perhaps he could be an artist who abandons his art.
It doesn't sound like he'll be one of those.
No. But all I need is a beginning. After that, what he really does doesn't matter. It's what I make up that matters.
Papa!
Good evening, gentlemen. Well, Hanno, what are you doing?
Kai has come to do lessons with me, Father.
Herr Senator.
Count Merle. Well, and what lessons do you have for tomorrow, Hanno?
We have Cornelius Nepos, some accounts to copy, German themes in literature, and...
That's why we're here, sir. We're studying the theme of a hero.
With Herr von Trotha as your model. Hanno?
Yes, Papa?
The lieutenant's been more than 2 hours with Mama. Listen. The music. It torments me. I don't understand it, but it disturbs me hour after hour. It chokes me. Musical value. What is that? Why is it she calls melodies that touch me cheap sentiment and this chilling, desperate noise drenching my house hour after hour, real music? I sometimes think it's the thing you love most in the world too, Hanno. The only thing you love. Is it?
Papa.
You, who never have words to express your thoughts, take his hand so gently and yet firmly and gaze up straight and clear into his eyes for the first time.
Never mind. Never mind that now. You must be allowed to be who you are, perhaps. Not the boy I dreamed you'd be. He'll be someone else's son one day. Perhaps yours. Don't look so sad. That's not the worst of it. Not in the least. This is the worst. The silence.
Hanno.
Yes, Papa?
A man's coming on important business this evening. Will you stand before the door to the smoking room and take care that nobody, absolutely nobody, you understand, disturbs us?
Yes, Papa.
Captain Milne.
Senator. Hanno? I'll go now.
Good night, Kai.
You'll stand in your sailor suit outside the smoking room for many patient hours, hearing earnest voices within, twisting your sailor's knot tie in one hand. When an apprentice comes out of the office with a telegram for the senator, you'll put your free arm in its blue sailor sleeve across the door and say as firmly as a man,
"No one goes in. Papa is making his will."
"If you please, Senator."
"If you please."
"Come in and sit down, please. One moment, please."
"Sit down, please.
Are you well, Herr Buddenbrook?" "Apart from..."
"I'm merely blind with pain, Brecht. I had to leave a council session."
"Pain? Where? Let me see. Yes. Here. Left side. Lower jaw. Back molar. Decayed, of course. We shall have to proceed to extraction."
Oh, very well. Proceed then.
I'll paint it a little. Please sit very still and open very wide."
"Open very wide."
"Thank God,"
thinks Thomas Buddenbrook, "when the pain begins.
It'll all soon be over. It can't last long."
3 or 4 seconds. The pain grows and grows to limitless, incredible heights, to an insane, shrieking torture tearing his brain.
"Here we are. Here we are. Now I must bear it."
"One moment, please.
One moment, please."
Thomas feels a sudden, fearful blow as if his neck has broken, and a cracking noise filling his chest.
"Ah, the crown, I thought so.
What do you think? What about the crown?"
"It broke, Herr Senator. I was afraid of it. The tooth is in a very bad condition. If you come to me sooner, it was my duty to make the experiment."
And so...
"Leave it to me, Herr Senator."
What happens next?"
"I take out the roots with a lever. There are 4 of them."
"4 of them? 4 more pulls?"
"Yes, unfortunately."
"My dear fellow, you expect too much of me. This is enough for one day." "Oh, will you be kind enough to open a window a little?"
"Of course, Herr Senator. It will be perfectly agreeable to me if you come tomorrow or the next day or whenever is convenient. If you permit me, I shall paint a little more now to reduce the pain somewhat."
No, please, no more, Brecht. I must go now."
Of course, Herr Senator. Let me help you down the steps."
"Thank you."
"One moment, please."
He gets as far as Fisher's Lane, crosses before the flower shop. Middle of the road, something happens. His brain swings round faster and faster in circles, growing smaller and smaller, until it crashes with enormous, pitiless force against a stony centre. He half turns, falls, and strikes the wet pavement face first, arms outstretched. His white kid gloves lie in a puddle, through which a second puddle of blood soon starts to run.
"Who is it?
Is he drunk?
Poor devil.
My God. Did you see?
Hey, roll him over.
What a way to go."
Senator Thomas Buddenbrook has died of the toothache.
can't leave, Gerda. You can't be so cold and cruel as to take Hanno from us. He's all the family I have left now. If you take yourselves away, there'll be nothing left for me but to go and sit on the rocks.
Sit on the rocks?
Oh, it's just something we used to say. I beg you, give it some more time. Maybe in a year or two when things are settled. It's such a second shock to me, you see, Gerda. Almost a sort of betrayal. That Tom wrote a new will. That he's chosen to end everything this way and not pass the business on to his own son. Why? Do you know? Why did he do that? I don't know what to think.
I can't be troubled with that.
Some people will talk. Not our friends, of course. People will talk, you know. If you leave so suddenly like this...
People always talk. And what are you fearing, Tony? That people might say Hanno isn't a Buddenbrook after all?
Oh, don't be angry with me. Of course he's a Buddenbrook. It's only he's so different from Thomas, and you know how people like to gossip.
Different from Thomas? Different? Tony, Hanno's so like Thomas. Only you and he himself could never see it.
As Senator Thomas Buddenbrook willed it, the firm is dissolved. The Fisher's Lane house is sold for a fraction of its building costs. Most of the furniture, except the grand piano and harmonium, is sold. The Family Chronicle is relocated to Tony and Erica's little flat, and you and your mother move to a small villa while she considers a return to Amsterdam when your schooling is over. It's 6 o'clock on a cold, wintry morning in 1876, and you and I are 15 years old. Oh. Your very entrails rebel at a sound as grim as dentistry. You've been dreaming Lohengrin after seeing it at the theatre the night before, a reward for bearing Herr Brecht's drill buzzing and boring into your head for the last time. You must get up and prepare Latin and chemistry. But you don't, of course. You go back to sleep. Fräulein Clementine, a sour maid of all work employed since Ida was sent home to Prussia, wakes you impatiently at 7:30.
You'll be late. Again.
Washing your face in icy water, you find your nose is bleeding. At 8 o'clock, you've missed morning prayers and creep into the empty classroom, hoping to mingle with the mob when they return.
Late again, young Buddenbrook.
Hello, Kai. Why were you hiding?
You could have been a master coming to check. Don't imagine I was late, though. Been here hours, reading. It's warmer than home. See this, Fall of the House of Usher. Worth a lifetime of Latin translations. If ever I could write something like this. All right, then. You can tell me. Was it beautiful? Lucky man. I've never been to a theatre. There's not the slightest chance of me ever getting to one.
I'm not sure the price isn't too high. My head's really hurting, Kai. I feel...
I take it you don't know the opening of the Metamorphoses by heart, then. My purpose is to tell of bodies transformed utterly to beings of a different kind.
He's bound to pick me. And then I'll get another black mark. One more black mark and they'll keep me down next year. And they'll separate us, Kai.
That'll never happen. They'll never part us. You'll see how stupid I can be. You heavenly powers, look with mercy on my poor endeavours. Come on, Hanno. Don't despair. Listen, the rabble are coming.
The opening lines of Metamorphoses. Let's see now, let me see. Peters.
Peters? He's not in doing it alphabetically. He's just buried
animus
his sister.
Mutatis.
Oshigasha.
Dicere formas corpora. Aspirate meus.
Peters has a grip.
Ab origine mundi. Ad mea perpetuum deducite tempora carmen.
Yes, enough, Peters. Keller, translate.
See, in Nova Fert,
those whom the gods
in
love.
Ways, things, new things.
Cretin! Sit down, Keller, stupid and lazy, both! Let me see. Buddenbrook!
Sir?
Herr Buddenbrook, will you have the goodness to translate?
Hanno, here!
You heavenly powers are my guides in this as in all things, so do not desert me while I spin this thread. This unbroken thread of verse.
Oh, Buddenbrook, you improvise, unhappy wretch. They say you're musical. I see no evidence of that in this rendition. But you have studied the lines you mangle. I can't deny it. Sit down. You've worked hard. That must suffice. Oh, and Peters?
Sir?
You have a crib in your book. Do you think I didn't see it? I'm putting a black mark in the register. You are the shame of the class. Recess. Out with the gas lights, up with the blinds, windows open. Outside, go on, get some air.
Safe. You had wonderful luck.
I had your crib.
What is it?
I feel sick, Kai. I don't like that kind of luck. It makes me feel sick.
Look, here's a door. An outer door. It's open. And outside, there's the street. Let's go for a little walk, eh? We have 6 minutes. Or we could never come back.
And then what?
What do you mean?
Then we'd have to do something. Be something. Have a career. They ask me all the time now what I want to be. I don't know. I can't answer. I can't be anything. I'm afraid of everything.
Why are you like this today?
I'm not like you, Kai. I get so tired all the time. I heard Pastor Primsheim saying to someone that one must give up on me. I come from a decayed family.
Did he say that?
Uncle Christian's locked up in an institution in Hamburg. If I cut myself, it never heals. My gums hurt all the time. If only everyone would give up on me.
I won't. What about our operas? Your music?
What about my music? There's nothing to it. Shall I travel and give recitals, concerts? Can you see it? I can only improvise.
I want to write something marvellous. Something marvellous about your music. Will you play this afternoon, when you get home?
Yes, I'll play. Though I should do my homework and practice my sonatas. But after I've had my supper with Mama, I'll improvise. I can't help it, and it only makes everything worse.
Worse? I know what you mean. I do understand. I know.
And you do play. Cases of typhoid fever take the following course. First, the patient feels depressed, moody, and exhausted. They can't eat and wish only to sleep. There is pain in the head and spells of giddiness. The bones ache, and occasionally the nose will bleed. Then a violent chill seizes them and little red spots appear. The temperature rises to 104 degrees. By the second week, there's so much humming in the ears they are practically deaf. The temperature goes up to 105.8. By the third week, the patient lies insensible. This is the crisis. And though there may be many treatments the clever doctor will administer, all these will mean nothing. For at the crisis, life calls to the patient, calls like a lover to his soul. He hears, and it may be there's a connection, one desire in his heart that will turn him back, and he will live. But if he shudders to hear life's voice and flies from the call, then it's clear the patient will die. In the end, I force my way to your bedside, past them all, the ragged little count that no one knows. And though you smile gently to hear my voice, and I kiss your hands over and over again, you do not turn back. 10 years on, here I sit at Travemünde in a beach chair. Finishing my story, I pause. The sea whispers, I close my eyes. I'm looking into a world unborn and formless. How is it to be dead, Hanno?
My story belongs to no one now.
I cut the strings. I'm free. So tell me, Kai, how are you?
Busy. Sick at heart, thinking of our opera. Of all the music you took with you that the world will never hear.
Someone else will write it. Play it. Look up.
I do. The sea recedes, and each inexhaustible wave furrow leaves behind, on the sands, dazzled and dazzling outcasts from another world, souls from another element, new forms. The sea whispers, and I see you among these glittering figures, smiling, tender, excited. Are you laughing at me?
What comes next, Kai? Oh, what comes next?
In the final episode of Buddenbrooks by Thomas Mann, dramatised for radio by Judith Adams, Elizabeth Buddenbrook was played by Barbara Flynn and Thomas Buddenbrook by Joseph Milson. Tony Buddenbrook, Claire Corbett, Christian, Carl Prekop, Gerda, Colleen Prendergast, and Hanno, Jean Goodman and Harry Lawty. Count Mern, Hugo Docking, Ida Youngman, Alison Pettit, Herr Fuhl, David Thorpe, Dr. Grabo, Stephen Critchlow, Brecht, Gerard McDermott, The Masters, Ben Crowe and Sean Prendergast, and The Boys, Liam Maslov-Boxer, Scott Smith, George Sanderson, and Diego Loss. The narrator was Pip Carter. Buddenbrooks was directed by Chris Wallace and is an Autolycus production for BBC Radio 4.
This week on Radio 4, we hear from the anti-apartheid campaigner, Albie Sachs.
I'm alone in solitary confinement in a prison near the centre of Cape Town. The security police have locked me up and they want information from me, and it's about the struggle against apartheid. It's 1963. And I think I hear whistling from deep in the prison.
The Largo from Dvořák's New World Symphony, launching the new series of soul music on BBC Radio 4 on Tuesday morning at 11:30.